Welcome. Welcome, friends. Welcome to ArtCast. I'm so glad you joined me. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, here to bring you a fount of information, a treasure trove of knowledge of the architectural kind. Yes, now most of the time we've been talking about the architecture of software systems, but today we encounter a different breed. There's a whole group of architects who think about servers, networks, switches, routers, and how all of this stuff is going to be kept up and running so that the rest of you guys who build software will have some place to deploy it. And today, we have one of them. I'd like to welcome to ArtCast from Saudi Aramco, Mr. Waleed Nima. Waleed, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name is Waleed Nima. I work for Saudi Aramco. I come from actually an engineering background. I have a degree in civil engineering that may explain some of the examples that I've used in the article. But I have a master's in computer science. I've also started in the field of computers as a technician and worked my way up, and obviously I have an academic background, and then after that I got involved in databases and development, and I have all three Microsoft certifications with experience of about 15 years.
Okay, so the article that you've written, it talks about a technical architecture, and you know, most of my career I've been on kind of the other side of a solutions, software, architecture. But this is really more aimed at infrastructure architecture, isn't it?
Yes, the topic here is about infrastructure architecture, which represents, I guess, the first iteration of our experience doing this right now with a computer operations department. And basically, reason for architecture being more popular nowadays probably goes to, back to the fact that finance officers need to justify the big IT expenses, and they need to see a plan that sort of like links the various IT initiatives to actual business benefits, and probably that's one of the driving forces, in addition to the fact that a lot of corporations start small and they grow gradually, and before they know it, they have a system that hasn't been planned well for quite some time.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying how those finance people are, right? They want us to spend money for a reason. I just don't understand that. But anyway, it seems like a lot of the architectures I have seen are almost things that kind of evolved. I get the picture of somebody who maybe starts with like a cardboard box, and they're living in this box, and then later they got a piece of tin and they picked up some wood, and later as they got more money they added some stone, and kind of evolved this hodgepodge of stuff into the house they live in, and the roof leaks and it's drafty, but they figure, well, this is the best we've got. It's almost as this is how a lot of IT networks have evolved.
Well, it's partly, it really describes a lot of times the way we operate, I guess even sometimes as humans, when we just simply kind of like get caught in the routine and don't plan for our lives and don't kind of like look back and say, what have we accomplished, what we wanted, or are we... do we actually have a plan for the next few years to come, or things of that sort? Because we just simply get caught in the day-to-day thing, and in operations, it's probably even more so that way, because people are just simply caught in fighting fires and trying to run a business, and at the same time accommodate new business requests, new customers, new reports, and enlarging and expanding the systems. So you get caught trying to run the business, and at the same time, you, in order to grow it, you just simply think of the quickest way of doing it, which is probably usually just a patch or something temporary that you forget about, that it was temporary or it meant to be that way. and it just keeps adding up. And yeah, you're absolutely right. This is how it typically happens a lot of times unintentionally.
Now, you're arguing that in this document that it's important to have somebody really in that role of technical architecture planning who's setting sort of this overall vision and getting beyond just the day-to-day let's survive mentality to really taking the plan forward, right?
I'm a firm believer that anything that isn't enforceable cannot be called a rule or even a standard or a guideline, because people will try to find shortcuts, and they just want to get the job done sometimes the fastest possible way, and that isn't always the best way or a way that the corporation wants people to do things. So unless there is some kind of enforcement, then rules just simply aren't going to be followed. And then if they're not going to be followed, why should they be created in the first place?
Yeah, in fact, I like the idea that you referred to kind of as an analogy to the building industry as the building inspector is somebody maybe different than the architect and is different than the people who are actually building stuff. So, you know, the electrician or the plumber or the carpenters, they all have to have their work inspected by the building inspector and signed off at certain points. And that's critical to making sure that, you know, I don't.
Absolutely. And typically we can relate to, I guess, that analogy, especially anyone who went through the hassles of building a house. We can relate to that because I guess it's more tangible. We and people who've been through it or who have seen it know that from first-hand experience. The architect is the one who put the plans that are supposed to represent what the owner wanted. Now, that architect probably is the most qualified person to judge whether or not what is being built is actually according to the specs that he has set, to which the owner has agreed. So, in essence, if the owner wanted something, he would tell the architect, because he's the technical person who can not only communicate to the builders what the owner wants, but also can make sure that it does happen exactly as the owner wanted it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. If we had the same kind of scrutiny over buildings or over IT infrastructure and software as we do over buildings, we'd probably have fewer problems, right? I mean, if we built buildings the way we build networks and software, I wonder if they wouldn't be collapsing all over the place left and right sometimes.
Yeah, well, obviously, in the construction and civil engineering industry, they have to be more careful with that. But for us, it just the way it happens, the software engineering as a discipline isn't obviously as old as the construction industry, and we're learning, we're getting better. I've done certain projects where I was pretty much the architect, the builder, the tester, the person who did the documentation, and everything. In small projects, sometimes you find yourself having to do all of that.
Now, in your article, you talked a little bit about importance of getting cooperation from the operations staff. So if they see you as some kind of person who's there to expose their incompetence, they're likely to resist you and hide things from you. What kind of lessons have you learned about things that really help this relationship?
Ron, I couldn't stress that more, but I think the most important message that you as an architect want to convey to operations staff is that you are sort of like their right hand to help them get things done that they don't have the time to do. And it's not that you know better than them, or you're trying to enforce things over them that they don't like. You just have to really show and prove good intentions and work side by side next to them, and actually probably display some examples of this I guess, spirit, so that they can start, you know, believing that, okay, man, look, those people, the architect team, they have done 1, 2, 3, and this actually has helped us, and it helped us save time, and so on. And also, when the management sees that, I think they will also be on your side.
Yeah, and you talk a little bit about process in here, which I thought was interesting, because oftentimes people, when we talk about architecture, they envision the equivalent of a blueprint, which tells you the thing you want to build, but it doesn't really say much about the process for building it. I've seen the equivalent of network blueprints, right, where you see a big Visio diagram with lots of servers and hubs and routers and switches and all kinds of stuff like that. And that says nothing about process, but yet you're arguing in this article that process is critical.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, if you refer to the various architecture frameworks, start with the reference the Microsoft reference architecture, and even if you go to Zachman's and some others, they all say that architecture is about process, technology, and people. It is not just simply technology. And as I said in the article, that the process frequently is really what makes or breaks a service. If we do not look at the whole thing as a service, which obviously is composed of all those three elements, process, people, and technology, then we're just simply not being realistic. A lot of times there are examples, one after another, throughout my experience, that I know for a fact that the technology is there, and sometimes even the process is there, but then the people are the ones who break this whole thing, because simply there's no enforcement. You could think of enforcement, I guess, as part of the process as well. But those three factors are really all necessary to make sure that the service is delivered. And in speaking about architecture, what is the end goal? What are you trying to accomplish? I think we all agree that we're trying, as IT, we're trying to provide a better service for our either clients, customers, and then secondly, we want to have a smooth operation. We want to have peace of mind. We want to know when things break before the whole world knows about them, and maybe we get a chance to fix them. So it really is much more than just simply technology. A prime example of that, for instance, think of change management. That's really more of a process than technology, but a lot of times if you don't have the technology, if you don't have the tools to make it happen, it becomes very hard. But I've seen some examples when you have the tools and beautiful system, it works great, but it's not used, because there's, number one, no enforcement and no, I guess, incentive from management to say, guys, this is really important, and there isn't proof that can link, problems with lack of change management, as an example.
Well, and the other thing that's really interesting is that in order to improve the architecture or the situation, you have to really measure or monitor it, which I think is really part of, like you've been talking about enforcement. In order to enforce a policy or a goal or whatever, sometimes management is a key part, or not management, but monitoring is a key part of that.
Yes, monitoring is actually essential because it's basically your eyes when you're not watching. And obviously, our eyes cannot watch everything and we cannot know everything. In the next article, actually, that I'm working about on data services architecture, I propose a team model that's made of 8 different roles, and the first one is standard changes, being able to do standard changes. Incident support is the second. Third is monitoring. Fourth is reporting. Fifth is analysis. The sixth one is problem resolution. Seventh is optimization, and then finally, eighth is planning. And a lot of times, a lot of operations, they only do the first and the second, which is the standard changes and the incident support, or what's known typically as firefighting. And then they do a little bit of monitoring. And then in certain cases where they have a little more monitoring, they've actually built an infrastructure for monitoring. The question is, are they really attending to those alerts? Are they doing something about those alerts? That's really a big question, and it has to be a complete link. You can't just do little monitoring and then think it's enough, or do more monitoring and not do something about what the monitoring is telling you.
Yeah, and I like this example that you have in the article about an action plan. And coming up with a concrete action plan that ties into your architecture is really key to getting the right, you know, workflow planned and knowing whether you can do it in-house or outsourcing it and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you notice that, we tried to stress that so much in at least in the documentation, by providing for every section success metrics. And then at the end, we've collected all of those success metrics and put them in one action plan summary table, sort of like a checklist, but it actually has more than that, where you can describe what kind of resources are required, and you put there a deadline and priority and all of the things that bring to life all of those recommendations that you've spent so much time trying to put together.
Well, and what's great about a document like this is that it facilitates the communications with management. So when you go before the executives and you say, well, we need this much money to get this done, and they say, what are you going to do with that money? Here's the plan. And then later, when you're reviewing it with them, you can show progress against the plan, show which of these have been done and where you're at. It's a great tool. It really helps you to look like you know what you're doing when you step before the executives, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely, Ron. As a matter of fact, I'm really quite happy with the results that we've got so far, because we, out of the architectural planning that we've done, we've covered various disciplines such as directory services, file and print, data services, corporate email, and so on. And we've started with this, and we've used immediately this documentation that we've produced for in exactly the way that is displayed in that table of contents there. We've used that to get Microsoft Consulting Services involved with us to give us a quote about to do actually vision and scope document. And with this, with what we have there as an input to them, it was really a breeze. I mean, it helped a great deal for them to understand what we were trying to accomplish. So it helps you later on when you're trying to implement this. And also, just like you said, it's automatic documentation for management, because the very first thing of this documentation is a one-page executive summary that basically wraps it all up and gives them the big picture, what the benefits are, what the issues are that we're trying to solve, what the benefits, what they will get out of doing it. And then it gives them also in some of the disciplines we provided top 10, which is basically top 10 priorities. So it also tells them in just one pager the top most important concerns that if we spend time and effort and probably money fixing, then our environment would be so much better.
Well, I'm sure that many of the listeners to this podcast will be saying, "What article? What are you talking about? I haven't seen anything." So, I want to encourage everyone to go to msdn.microsoft.com/architecture, and that's our Architecture Center on MSDN. You'll find a link there for the Architecture Journal. And you'll want to go there and look for Journal 6, because this article appears in Journal 6, which hasn't been published as of today, but it will be very shortly. And you can take a look at Waleed's article. I think there's some great insights there. And future articles in the same vein coming from Waleed, another one for the next issue of Journals. So stay tuned for that. Waleed, thank you so much for your work on the journal article and your time today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you, Ron.
Waleed Nima, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Waleed. So good to have you with us here on ArtCast today. Well, what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Technical architecture planning is a good thing. I knew it was. You knew it was. You knew. But, you know, it's like those, there's just so many good things that you ought to be doing and you're just probably not doing them all. It always helps to listen to someone who's actually doing this stuff, doing it well, and understanding it. And that's what we do here on ArtCast. So you need to tune in every day, every day, every day to pick up on these nuggets of wisdom, because I'm telling you, it will pay off. Invest in your career. And that's what we're here to help you with here on ArtCast.